amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breads on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's good?
SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, on this Tuesday and the last dark day of the Saratoga summer season. Andy Serling standing by. He's getting ready for Thursday's final at the post show as well. Looks like a big finale. And Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Good. Very good.
I've been so looking forward to talking to you today.
I was looking forward to getting your take on everything that went on Saturday. It was
what
a day.
You and I have had enough time together this summer.
So true.
It's really, so true. I've barely seen you.
That was.
You haven't seen me at all, but I've barely seen you.
Hey now.
Well, hopefully this week you and me and I will get to spend at least a few quality minutes together.
That'd be good.
I hope so.
Well, I'll be out tomorrow. We're in the nightcap. We're in the tent.
Oh, good. Well, I'm actually on early, so I'm off at like 3:30, so I'll be around. So.
Oh, cool.
Come visit.
All right. I will. That we will do. I just hope the weather holds off tomorrow.
I think there's supposed to be some shower. I don't think any. Don't worry about it.
All right.
Don't let weather get in. Just forget about weather.
No,
so boring.
Well, I mean, you know.
Whatever. Knows?
Exactly.
Good weekend, wasn't it?
Oh my God! I mean, I hated to not be able to come, and believe me.
Oh, you didn't come on Saturday?
Oh no, there's no way. Not with that crowd.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. You just can't get around. Just.
Well, we could have found a spot for you, Steve. You're a very important man.
Thank you. Even though the eye is steadily, I'm steadily able to see more, and
well,
this bubble is shrinking, it also offers a different challenge, which is now it's like having a float in your eye, and it's bouncing and causing headaches. I mean, this has been some experience, I'll tell you.
It would suck at any time, but it's a particularly bad time for it to happen. But hopefully you'll be fine.
It's coming. It's coming.
Or whatever. Yeah.
A month. Another month. Exactly. It's 4 weeks more. It's been 4 weeks today, and it's another 4 weeks till this thing disappears from my view, and then I can get get a new prescription for the glasses, and we'll be almost back to normal.
Good to go.
Meanwhile, yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, it was just from afar, and it was fun to be able to watch a broadcast. I so rarely am able to watch a big day broadcast. I always forget to DVR them. The coverage was just great, Andy. I mean, everybody contributing. Everybody got involved.
Thanks.
Yeah.
We do our best.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good.
So let's talk about Code of Honor.
Yes.
What's that? You know, people like to say in racing that a loaded gun will go off in anyone's hands. A loaded gun's particularly dangerous in good trainers' hands.
Yes.
And I think in this case with Shug. And, you know, I think it would be interesting to go back and read comments from Shug about this horse going back, because I feel like he sort of often alluded to the fact that he was a horse that would get better with time, you know. I wouldn't say work in progress. I don't know. I don't want to put words in his mouth. More just a horse that would just need time to come around, like a lot of horses. And, Shug said after the Derby, you know, we're going to take a step back and point to the Travers. Well, he got that done. It's amazing that it's been 21 years since Shug's last Travers, but four. And it's funny, when I was going through for the draw to look up, I knew Shug had won it. I was just trying to think of exactly how many, and I'd forgotten about Rhythm. It was the year after Easy Goer, and he won three Travers in 10 years. And that's a remarkable achievement, especially in this day and age. And it wasn't that long ago, so I'll consider it modern times, like we consider our lifetime modern times.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing when, you know, with some of those powerful stables, I think Burt Mulholland has a record of five.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for Shug to put together that many wins, it's remarkable. And then you come back 20 years later. And I was just thinking about, I don't know if we talked about this last week, when Dunbar Road won the Alabama. It was 36 years ago that Peter Brandt won the Alabama with Spit Curl. I was trying to figure out, has there ever been an owner that's won the same grade one? And, you know, and let's just say, you know, before gradings, that the Alabama and Travers, those races, let's consider them grade ones, the major races. They've been an owner has been 36 years between winning the same grade one. And it's almost impossible to imagine, to be honest. And, you know, Shug coming back, you know, 21 years after last winning it, and 30 years after Easy Goer, that's a tremendous achievement. I mean, Shug is probably a better trainer than he was back then, and probably over time he even learned more. And such a great trainer, and such a good job with this horse. I mean, he was just best. And we could talk about Tacitus a little bit, but you watch the race again. Johnny, who's really, it's like Johnny said, you know, and I know he struggled to be in the meet. Johnny said to himself, I need to remind people that I can still ride. And I thought John Velasquez had just a sensational Travers day. It may have been overshadowed a little bit, you know, by Code of Honor winning and Chad Brown winning five races, but I think it shouldn't be lost. Just how well John Velasquez rode, and his ride on Significant Form was absolutely perfect. He gave an excellent ride on a Todd horse on Sunday. I didn't like it all. I was completely wrong about it. And people say, well, he rode the rail. Johnny managed to stay at that Jerry horse, Extraordinary Jerry. He was on the rail for a very, very brief portion of the race. If you watch the head-on, he was inside of horses, but not on the rail. And, I mean, he just managed to ease Code of Honor back in just the right way to get him to absolutely perfect position. And if you watch the race again, you realize sort of halfway through, Code of Honor just looks like a winner. I mean, it's easy to say that knowing mm-hmm. he won, but he was traveling so well and in such a good, perfect position, and they're taking nothing away from the horse. And John Lester did his job perfectly, which is to do everything right to give a horse a chance to win if the horse is good enough. And he was more than good enough. And I would say, from a distance perspective, I mean, obviously, and we'll talk about Chancelot losing, but his Amsterdam is still going to stick out as the best performance by a 3-year-old this year. But as far as route races, this was the definitive performance by Code of Honor. And, you know, if he progresses, it'll be interesting, because Tacitus and Code of Honor could meet again in the Jockey Club Gold Cup.
That's the way it looks.
And, you know, they're both very good horses, but boy, did Code of Honor deliver in a big way, and it was really exciting. And just you know, if you want to see the best horses win the big races, I think we saw it again. I mean, one of the stories of the race was the decision, Jose Ortiz and Bill Mott, to be more aggressive with Tacitus, and clearly in watching the start, Jose really rode him hard out of the gate. you know, whether or not they're, I don't think either one of them wanted to end up in front like they did. They probably wish they'd been sort of aggressive, and then Mucho Gusto had gone on and maybe even taxed, and he could have sort of taken back and been third. He still ran very well. It's not as though the pace collapsed. I think Mucho Gusto ran well, too.
Yep.
I love Tacitus, and I think he will have his days going forward. I really do. I'm not saying that he can't come back and win the Jockey Club, but he was second best. I'm sure if they had it to do over again, not sure, but they might want it to be a little bit less aggressive with him. But I still think Tacitus ran very well. He just lost a horse that ran better, and there's no shame in that. Maybe they've gotten the misimpression that a lot of people have that Tacitus is some sort of problem horse. I don't think he's a problem horse. I think he's a horse that's just been unlucky in some big spots. But I also think he's a terrific horse. And I'm expecting that both these horses feel like horses that can and will race next year. And I look forward to seeing those horses going forward because they're both very, very good. And Mucho Gusto's improving as well for Bob Baffert. I don't think a lot of us, myself, and certainly I can say myself, didn't think he was going to be effective at a mile and a quarter. And his last two races are the best races he's ever run. So he's pretty good. I thought Owendale ran very well. He was closer to the pace than you would have expected, and he wasn't right on the rail, but he was pretty darn close. Luis Saez, who was on Highest Honors, who I also think ran pretty well in the race, you know, especially for a lightly raced horse. Luis Saez said, "I'm not going to let you out of that position," and Florent was sort of screwed by the rail. I think Florent knew to stay off the rail as much as he could, and he and I had even joked about it when I ran into him early in the week, and we joked about it a little on Twitter before the race. I really do think that Florent was very attuned to it. It's not what you can do when you draw the rail. And sometimes guys won't let you get off it. He wasn't right on it. But considering he was up close, which is not his usual running style, and close to the inside, and I think it may have been a day on Saturday as time progressed where he really wanted to be as far off the rail as you could be or farther off and not just a bad rail, that second race performance notwithstanding, which is a very confusing performance. We've seen that on a number of days where it really seemed like the inside wasn't a place to be, where there's been one race that's been aberrational. Usually it means it's not a bad rail, but it's hard to believe it wasn't on Saturday, considering the promises fulfilled and separation of powers and even Chancelot. I thought Chancelot got a just stupid ride. He's got speed. Send him out there. Open up and get up.
I agree.
I think he would have won if he did that. I don't think he lost a lot of defeat. But regardless, the Travers, I know we saw some very good performance by horses, but none better than Code of Honors. And I'm not going to make an excuse for Tacitus. I think he can rebound from this and give Code of Honor a tussle at Belmont. But they weren't beating Code of Honor on Saturday unless he got unlucky. He was terrific.
A couple of questions out of that. How would the race have been different had looking at Bikinis broken cleanly?
I don't know. You know, who knows? I mean, obviously, I picked him. I'd like to think he would have run better. I have picked the last place finisher of the Travers more than a few times. He just, who knows? I would have been different. I don't see that he would have. I don't think they would have aggressively pursuing that pace. So I don't know. I doubt he would have beaten Goat of Honor. You always want to see these horses get their best chance, right? But I don't really know. Who can say? You know, I can't really say.
Well, fair enough. No, I just, you know, curious.
The one thing I think people should remember, anybody, if you want to be critical of Jose Ortiz or Bill Mott, and I'm not being, is if he didn't ride aggressively, would he have beaten Mucho Gusto? Because what if Mucho Gusto finds himself in a more comfortable lead?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great point.
So, it's easy to second guess after a race, but then ask yourself, well, what if they rode him differently and Mucho Gusto went a little slower up front? I'm not so sure that Tacitus would have beaten him, much less Code of Honor. So I think it's very hard to criticize the ride and tactics. I think it's just an interesting point of discussion, not one to be critical. There's a big difference.
No, I think that that's, you know, a big part of, you know, what you look at afterward. One of the other questions I raised this morning and didn't even really get a chance to discuss it all that much with Shug yesterday, because we kind of knew from previous conversations with Shug that he was absolutely not worried about 10 furlongs again, the same way he wasn't going into the Derby. Why was there this preponderance of concern from people that, Code of Honor's not going to be as effective? To me, that was nonsensical.
I don't know. I had those questions. I mean, he didn't finish in the Derby. he still ran very well, but he didn't finish the last eighth of a mile or so. And he kind of ran like a miler in his last race. I think it's unfair to have those questions. I don't think those questions exist anymore. Look, I had them. So in my, I'm not going to go back and say I didn't have some. I think you always have those questions. I didn't think I wasn't adamant that he won't get it in any respect. And you have to have such respect for Shug. But I think until they do it effectively, it's at least reasonable to question it. You know, he ran like a perfect miler last time, right? Listen, there's no question. So you can say at the end if you have those questions. I don't know if I'd use the phrase you were wrong to have them, but they certainly were of no concern as the race played out. I mean, he looked like he was running through the wire. He looked like a horse that was just getting 10 furlongs. He looked like that horse was going to get 11 or 12. He was really running through the wire. He wasn't tiring at all, it seemed to me.
No.
He was lengthening his stride at the end.
Yeah. It was a powerhouse
performance. A very solid, strong, you know, a big figure. I just thought it was one of the most satisfying Travers in a while. And listen, I'm always happy to see Shug win big races. I just, you know, for somebody who's been around the game, I've been around for a long time at this point, and I don't know how many better trainers there have been in my lifetime in New York than Shug, if any.
No, I agree.
You know, it's just a question of getting the right horse, right? Honor Code. I mean, just because he dominated in the early times with the Phipps horses doesn't mean because he's won a little less, though he did win the Derby a few years ago, he's any bit less of a trainer.
Well, the testimony to Shug is, and I'm going to have this discussion undoubtedly tomorrow with Sid Fernando, is that, and I had this conversation last night with John Parada, so it's fresh in my mind, and John's career, you know, parallels the duration of Shug's career, and he has seen it
only in
close.
Time.
Yeah, exactly. the point that in fact it's not as if Shug's clients are going out and buying the fashionable pedigree.
Right.
They're not buying the fastest horse at the 2-year-old sale. They're not buying the $1 million yearling. They're homebreds, and he has been able to craft success with whatever hand he gets dealt.
How about Performer earlier in the day?
That Performer was wonderful. In fact, Shug was as excited when I brought Performer up yesterday. You could hear his voice say, "How about that? How about Performer?"
He was running. You know, yeah. I think Shug obviously must have considered scratching him and running in the Better Talk Now on Sunday, which I had actually picked him in at run. I'm not sure he would have won that race, though. He's got a big turf pedigree the way he ran Saturday. I'm not sure he wouldn't have as well as Front Row of the Fed. And Bourbon War, both of them ran that race. But I think that's the fastest. I think Front Row of the Fed's 298 buyers in the turf are the fastest 3-year-old turf figs of the year. I could be wrong, but I think they are.
Hmm.
I don't think anybody's run a higher number in the turf. Well, Kenley's really got a 97 when he won the Belmont Derby. Regardless, you know, but no, Performer's an exciting prospect for sure.
You know, to go, you know, back to Shug. One of the things to me that was over the past decade of note is how he transferred all of those Phipps Janney pedigrees that were stamina. You know, stamina driven, stamina influenced into all that success on the grass with Mr. Speaker and Point of Entry and Data Link.
So many of those horses, you know, will date back to a Bold Ruler and those kind of pedigrees.
Sure.
It's like I always feel like there's always grass in the Phipps pedigrees. There's always grass somewhere going back. So it's not surprising they've done well in that surface overall.
Well, Boisterous and Air Support and I'm forgetting some. I mean, it seemed like for a long time, I every time I was talking to Shug, you know, other than Orb, that we were talking about tremendous turf success.
I bet you Orb would have been a good turf horse.
Oh, he had always anticipated that there was going to be turf with him. Listen, he's unbelievable. He's just simply. To me,
you know, you look how many trainers are still in the game that have had the success he's had for 35 years. You know, he won the test with Last Trump 1983 year. I thought it was really cool was that he had Plainsman, who ran second. By the way, he ran very well to be second a few weeks ago. And I, one of the first times I think that Sugar's had a horse for John and Anthony, who of course used to be Lob Lolly, and he's short leaf now, in a long time. And that's really the stable that put him on the map.
Oh, Van sure. Landing. That's who he started with. Yeah.
And Van Landingham, and it's funny, we were doing the show, and I think it was Lafitte and I, and Acacia was doing the interview in the paddock and stuff. And in the meeting, for whatever reason, I was half asleep or whatever, and I didn't even think of it. And I'm sitting on the desk with Lafitte, and I'm thinking, oh, God, you know, Shook's gone full circle, right? He's got Plainsman, and I was able to, you know, convey about Landingham, and, you know, he was a champion older horse in 85, and what he had done, and then Lafitte and I were looking up his record, his race. I forgot he set a track record in the Rebel, and then he got hurt in the Derby. I think he ran like 16th when he came back, and he was such a good horse. He was a great horse, actually. I loved him. I remember winning the Washington Cedar National first in the grass, the bog, by like 10 lengths, and so we were able to convey that to Acacia. She asked Sugar about it in the paddock. And he was talking about Van Landingham. I just love that stuff, you know. And I just thought that was really cool to get the chance talking. I mean, who knows? If it hadn't been for Van Landingham, I'm not saying he wouldn't have, and I don't know the absolute story, but without a Van Landingham to really put him on the map, would he have been noticed to get the Phipps job? And I'm not saying he wouldn't have been. I don't know the story, and it might be worth asking him sometime, but that's really the horse that said to everybody, who's this guy? Oh, he's pretty good. Right, I remember him showing up in '83 when he had Last Trump, and thinking, "I've never heard of this guy." No, I didn't. That kind of life, I wasn't following racing obviously as extensively as I am, where I would have seen he was winning in Kentucky or wherever he was. But you notice right away when you win a race like the Test, the first time he showed up in Saratoga, at least that I can remember. I'm guessing it was the first time in his name, and you know he's still around, winning a lot of big races. I mean, who are the trainers that are still around that were winning big races in the early '80s?
I mean, you know, the contemporaries from that standpoint, McAnally and Drysdale, maybe.
I mean, in New York.
New York.
Well, D-Wayne, obviously.
D-Wayne, yeah.
Right.
In New York. Boy, I mean, they're
How
gone.
How long has Gary Gullo been training?
30 years. Say him and as soon as his dad died, right? I mean, when his dad.
Tommy Gullo?
Tommy and Gary and you know Siaka, well, all of those guys, Bruce Levine, Gary,
yeah, Bruce has been around a long time, yeah,
Bobby Barbera,
yeah,
those guys all came up at the same time. They were all together.
You ever have Bruce on the show?
Sure, of course.
Good,
absolutely.
Bruce is an interesting guy.
There's one funny aside to this about Shug that you may not even you may not remember or know. Who owned, and I don't even know the circumstance because it was a Frank Whiteley trainee, but for whatever reason, Shug saddled a horse for his first graded stake win in the late 70s for Peter Brandt, Northernet.
You know, Peter and I were talking at the BCCA dinner the other night, and he brought up Northernet to me. Shug saddled, really, interesting.
In the Apple Blossom in 1978.
Wow. Now, did Shug work for Frank Whiteley?
Sure. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. I actually didn't know.
Yeah, I think absolutely.
And Barkley Tagg, right? Barkley worked for him too, right?
Barkley, I didn't realize.
I think Barkley did. I thought he did. I could be wrong, but I thought he did.
Well, I've got the right guy on Thursday to sort this out. That would be Haskin.
Actually, Peter told me, I didn't realize that Peter had bought Lakeville Miss, who, of course, was the dam at Magombo, so it makes sense that he did. And she got injured before they were able to run her, and that was in the Alabama. She got injured before it.
Lakeville Miss came up the other – did you and I talk about Lakeville Miss
Probably.
Recently?
Probably. I always talk about her. I love her.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah. Anyway, whenever Shug comes up, you can go on forever.
He traverses a long time of horse racing, a lot of great horses for a long time. So he's still good, very good.
And he's not going away. Right? That's the other part of this. He's going to have other chances. But like he said, I don't want to go 21 years again between Travers.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I wish that people got more of a chance to hear from Shug. Or, you know, I had Bill Mott was on with me on At the Post last week, and Bill's just fabulous, just talking about it. And Shug at the draw, I didn't get to talk a lot, but I could listen to those guys talk about horses forever.
Oh, no doubt.
So much history, so long. Smart people that, you know, understand the game. And it, you know, it's interesting to talk to them. They're also extremely realistic, right? You don't, you know, they're just, I mean, listen, I love horse racing, but can listen to people like that forever. And I sometimes in racing, I feel like these guys don't, like, you know, one guy, I wish Todd Fletcher, and I've teased Todd about this somewhat, I wish he would talk more about, you know, he doesn't want to come on my show. He's not, you know, he's, I don't know how comfortable he is in the shows. I mean, you have him on, but yeah. I think that Todd is an extremely fascinating and interesting guy to listen to. Very straightforward, you know, very well-spoken, funny. You know, and I wish, you know, a lot, you know, I think Todd, there's an impression by some people that Todd is a kind of a stiff guy and nothing to be further from the truth.
No, it's not right. That's not right at all.
We've had draws. He's always funny, you know, when he comes to their Belmont, when the Belmont draws, he's great. I just, you know, anyway, right. A lot of interesting people in the game. Smart, thoughtful people.
Let's hit some more highlights because I know we're going to end up getting short on time. But here we are, you know, 20 minutes in, haven't talked about the Elate versus Midnight Bizou confrontation.
It breaks my heart a little bit every time Elate loses. I don't know. I just love her. I just have a thing for her. She ran great. She ran a winning race and just lost. She ran a winning race last year and she lost. Terrific performance. And at the end of the day, Midnight Bizou has just been exceptional. And to have found a way to have won that race, given that the way things seem to be going early, mile and an eighth, no problem, Big Fig, two really good horses throwing it down. As far as I'm concerned, if Midnight Bizou does not win, if she doesn't win the Eclipse this year, then there's something seriously wrong with the entire system. You know, I wouldn't care if she ran in the Beldame and the Breeders' Cup Distaff and lost both of them. She has sealed it with the win she has, right? When you look at the great one,
gotcha.
Well, you know, sometimes weird things seem to happen, and hopefully, I don't care what she does, she's their champion this year.
I can't see how.
Did you think Princess of Silmar would lose it, with all due respect to Beholder, a number of years ago?
Well, that was that. At least there
I'm
was.
I'm not saying Beholder didn't deserve
comparable.
It.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, there were comparable kinds of.
But what happens if, just for argument's sake, they met in the Beldame, a late one, and then a late somehow won the Breeders' Cup Classic?
It would be a close vote. It would be a perilously close vote.
I don't think it should be.
I don't disagree. The problem you've got is...
I love Elate, so I'm not... It's not like, I've, you know, my bias would be heavily tilted towards Elate, but Midnight Bizou has had a championship year. It's over. She and Bricks and Mortar have already sealed their divisions, period.
I would agree.
The rest of the year.
And Matoli, technically, I would think Matoli.
I think Matoli is very much in the conversation for Horse of the Year. He proved that the Vanderbilt was a complete aberration, and it was a trip situation, et cetera, et cetera. He is, to me, he is one of, he, you know, right now I would say he, McKinsey and Bricks and Mortar are the three leading contenders. And I would not put, Midnight Bizou far behind them.
No, I brought that up with Jeff Bloom about her candidacy. We discussed it on TV. I just had him on radio, but on TV, I said to him, why are you, you know, don't you think you deserve to be in the Horse of the Year?
She does deserve to be in there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Especially if she wins out.
As I would argue, believe it or not, even though you could say that Whitney was the most impressive definitive performance of the year, that maybe McKinsey's the fourth one in that group.
Oh, yeah. Well, if he wins out.
Beat him in the Met.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he doesn't have a claim for Horse of the Year, but I'm not sure. It's not, you know, Bricks and Matoli and Midnight Bizou.
No, there's been a few.
Record McKenzie's are terrific. You know, as Whitney, but he's going to have to put together, you know, because he lost some big races. There's no shame in that. And some people think he was best in the Met Mile. I have to not be one of them. I can understand Sterling only won, but I still think that Matoli ran the best race.
Let me, you know, you mentioned bias in a different context, but let me ask you, how should we be evaluating this rail situation and, you know, how much of it is circumstantial and how much of it,
it's,
you know,
tricky. It's tricky. It's been very tricky. I think a lot
she
of it
have been horse of the year.
Horses going forward. Who's that?
It's tricky.
I love it. It's tricky. Okay. How about Arrow for Time? How great was that?
That was a big performance, and I felt bad for Sadler's Joy, though, because I thought he was getting the right kind of maneuver, but it just
he actually moved
wasn't
earlier than he normally does. He moved ahead of Annals. Annals caught him from behind, which is unusual. Listen, Annals of Time is always going to be one of my all-time favorite horses. I just love him, and you know, to think of what he could have been if he had been sound. And to think that he came back off this last one when he was off for, what, 20 months?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
He made that brief return, and then he's out for from October to June of a year plus later. And to come back and win the Sword Dancer, he's a tremendous horse. You know, Jerry Brown was mocking me because I had said on Talking Horses back at Belmont, if Annals of Time had stayed sound, he might have been the best American turf horse in the decade. And Jerry was just mocking me. Maybe he should reevaluate that position. I think he was. And he reminds me a little bit of Shakespeare. And Shakespeare did some pretty amazing things on the racetrack. And I don't want to, you know, I think Annals would have to do a little more. But it's funny, Jerry Bailey texted me when I made the comment about it on the show the other day. Because Shakespeare, I compare him because he came back from two serious injuries with severe layoffs, I believe, when grade ones, right? And he beat English Channel and the Joe Hirsch, I think. And then he came back and did it again, and that was, I think, Kieran had him the next go-around. But, you know, people forget that Shakespeare was in that Kitten's Joy and Artie Schiller crop. He just got hurt early in his three-year-old year. And that was an incredible threesome. Most people just say Kitten's Joy and Artie Schiller, and I think if Shakespeare had been sound, who knows what he could have done against them. But at the times, that kind of horse, just, you know, eight starts, right? So you got five wins, 2 seconds, and a third.
Yes.
And he could have won every one of those races. He unlucky to lose his return at Saratoga as a three-year-old. He was very unlucky in the Hill Prince. And, you know, Gidu was able to get away with a slow pace. And he beat him in a mile off that long layout. You know, just he never ran a race where he arguably didn't run the best race. Very similar to Bricks and Mortar.
You know, it's funny you say that. I'm looking down. You mentioned Gidu, who's very credible. He lost to Camelot Kitten and Beach Patrol in the Hill Prince.
Well, he didn't get a great trip that day either, believe me.
Well, and Hockey School is the one you're referring to in
Hockey
Saratoga.
School got away in the front end. I made a big bet on Hockey School that day, so I'm not whining. But
the point is, only horses of quality have ever finished in front of him.
Hockey School's open to debate how good he was.
He was okay.
Particularly good race after that. But having said that, no, he's a fabulous horse. And he's a great story. Great story of, you know, what happens when you're patient and you don't force a horse that's got some issues and you give them time. And I was shocked when he came back. I remember when Seth said to me he had his first work back, and I just love him, you know, that horse.
I think you said to me, you told me after he came back for that work, you said, you know, Seth told me that Annals of Time is back working. And I was like, Jesus, you're completely forgotten.
Yeah.
Completely forgotten.
Such a exciting. Yeah. For me, that was personally a meat highlight, probably the meat highlight. I just love that horse.
Well, and frankly, you know, for a division that everybody derides, the two channels ran well again, Maker and Cat, Sadler's Joy. It was a good running of the Sword Dancer, which sometimes suffers at the hands of the Million.
I love Channel Maker. He actually ran extremely well in this race, by the way, given where he was placed in there. I think he ran terrific. Channel Cat, I'm a Channel Cat fan as well. I like that a lot.
He's nice.
I mean, this was a strong running. I agree with you.
While we're on turf, let me slip in the Boston Spa, please, because it confused me from a handicapping standpoint.
It was an impossible race. The whole field could win, and
that's what I thought. Okay,
what happened?
Good.
The horse who got the best ride and trip won. Not knocking the second horse. That horse got a great ride and trip, too. But the Johnny rode significant form as well as you could ride a horse. And that was a race of trips. You kind of knew going in and coming out.
Well, speaking of trips or rides, what was Jose Ortiz doing on Secret Message?
I'd have to watch it again. Did he get lost in there?
He lost. He was at the back of the field. He never asked or barely asked, and it was bizarre.
I'd have to watch it again. I was on the set when that race was run, so I, you know, probably could use a few.
Well, there was a couple of betting aspects, by the way, of these two turf races. Yaprimo and Masha took money. I didn't get it.
I didn't get Masha. I didn't like her. I had an argument with Anthony about it on Talking Horses. I did not get her, especially from that post. I mean, I'm not saying she couldn't have won, but you knew she'd be over bad. And people get excited because she put in a big burst of beating much lesser horses. I didn't get her. I'm not Yo Primo. I'm not, or Ya Primo. I'm not surprised he took money in there. I mean, he ran okay. I didn't really like him, but I'm not shocked he got bad.
Yeah, I had no affection for him. Let's get a couple others in. How about Carlos Martin, his first grade one since 1991?
Yeah, no, that was great, Come Dancing. And she didn't break, and Javier got her to the outside. And she's a better horse than those where she runs a race. And it didn't come up that fast a race, but I was very happy for Carlos to get that big win, and then the Blue Devil guys as well. So that was great. That was a nice moment, yeah. I wish Separation had run a little bit better. She'd get mired down the inside. It wasn't really Jose's fault. You know, nobody really went, and she was there, and he sort of had to go there. And you didn't know at that point because it was close to the second race, and the rail wasn't really a place to be. But didn't matter. Come Dancing was just much the best.
Any lessons? How do we take away from the Chance a Lot experience?
I don't understand why suddenly Jorge Navarro is rating speed horses in sprints.
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
I mean,
I said that on TV
him.
Sunday.
He's never been afraid to have those horses get loose, and I don't know why. It's like, I don't get it. It's like suddenly he said, ooh, he's really good. Let's screw around. But I don't want to go. Go!
Yeah, I agree.
But I made money in the race. I'm not complaining. I'm complaining that Hogtree Hustle ran very well. If he hadn't been in there, I would have hit the try, exact, and everything. But that was also another terrific ride by John Velasquez, by the way. But, yeah, that was... I think there's a lot of people that misunderstood Chance a Lot and acted like it was a fake, his last race. I think it's crap. And he ran terrific. Just did not get the ride I would have given him.
And we don't know how much of the effect the inside was.
Right, well, that's the other thing. But you knew you were on the inside. And one of the things, you know, I was talking about this with Chad Brown. It's like, and I think the riders feel the same way. It's like, get off the rail a little bit. Just don't make the mistake of being there. If it turns out it's okay, so be it. But it's good to be in the two or three path, you know, and most of the riders try to do that the whole meet in general, is just stay a little off the rail and just knock yourself in trouble. And this was foolish just to what they did, because the key is use your speed to get out in front and get off the rail. I know Kendrick would have done it.
All right, now we're going to play a couple of games. Let me ask you this. Who's going to have the better career, Magic Star or Dabinette?
Who are they?
Well, Magic Star, was that Scat Daddy filly?
Well, beat me for a fortune in the last race when I picked the 37-1 shot. I ran second on top. I don't know. Who's Dabinette?
Dabinette
horse that I rad came up the rail? I tell you what. Jose is 6 up on IRAD, so obviously he's a big favorite for the talking title. But if IRAD somehow beats Jose for a nose, Jose will have a nightmare about that race, right? Where Dabinette got that ride coming up the rail by IRAD to beat Peter Mazzop. That'll be the one that, like, Jose will be thinking about, right?
Yeah.
And anybody that thinks that those two guys aren't competing against each other as hard as ever are out of their minds. I'm sure there's a huge rivalry, but Jose is obviously in the driver's seat by quite a bit.
You mentioned that you were a little confused a little bit by Tappet to Win and what that means, but 86 Buyer and Cassie, you know, has got real excitement about him.
If the rail was bad, then he might be the best 2-year-old we've seen all week. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to say it was, given how that race was run, but I agree. No, that was a ramp. Yep. Mark's had a terrific meet. Really
yes,
good. I think Janie Bett. That has made a real difference. You know, he's done a terrific job in New York over the last couple of years as an assistant trainer. And you've seen it in the results they've had. Their horses have run very well. And no disrespect to anybody else, but he's done a great job. And assistance, especially for operations like him, are so important.
Well, Andy, the season has got 6 race cards left.
Yep.
We've got a Woodward shaping up on Saturday. That's really kind of an intriguing cast has come together for those that haven't seen it.
Don't you have another guest?
John White, but I mean, this is probably my last chance. I know you'll blow me off next week because you'll be.
Because I'll be in the car?
Yes.
Well, it depends how early we leave. Well, I could come on Wednesday, Steve.
That's true, too. You got the week. That's true. You got a few days. Well, Mongolian Groom is coming to town from California. You got three from Todd, Vino Rosso, Bar Harbor, and Wooderson, who I love. Yoshida, Thomas at the Tot,
please
Mr. Buff.
Please don't pick Wooderson.
I'm not going to pick Wooderson, but I happen to like Wooderson. Mr. Buff and Preservationist, and maybe Forewarned. That's a nice
Who's Forewarned? Who is Forewarned?
That's Karen, isn't it?
I can't remember who. What has he done?
I think it's Kieran. He's something.
By the way, and I'm going to go after this. Endorsement fine in the Traverse too. I think he did. I think we're going to hear from him going forward as well. I should go. I got stuff to do, and you've got another guest.
You don't have anything. You have a pick for us. Give everybody a going away pick. You've had a great meet.
What do you mean a going away pick?
A pick for the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You've already handicapped the next 3 days. There must be
no. Finished. I finished Wednesday completely. I'm pretty much done with Thursday, and I'm just starting to try to make picks for Friday. It was hardly double drew on Sunday.
That's true.
How much my dark days I've been spending studying at PP. Embarrassing. Tomorrow.
What about the steak tomorrow?
Steak tomorrow. Oh, I like Tuggle over Our Country.
Okay.
I think Tuggle's very dangerous in there.
We should tell people that on Thursday, we do have the DQ'd John Kimmel player coming back in the stake.
I think that was.
Right? He should.
Should we discuss my last at the Post Live?
Yes, please. I saw a couple of guests, Eric Donovan, Chad Brown, and...
Eric getting top billing over Chad. He'll be very impressed. Chad will be on along with Dale Romans.
Oh, that's right, Dale Romans.
And Dave O'Rourke, who stood me up last week.
Oof.
He thinks he's getting a pass because he's the president now. He's not.
Christel.
He actually said he'll only come on if I abuse him. And Eric. Eric and I have obviously worked together for a long time, and we've been friends for a long time. And Eric's such a big part of our TV program, and the people behind the scenes in that TV department just will never get the love they deserve. It's so easy for those of us on camera for people to say the jobs we're doing, whether we're good or we suck, whatever. But the people behind the scenes are making that show go, and they're working so much harder than anybody could possibly imagine. I can't even imagine the amount of work that's been gone on this year by the people in the TV truck and the people behind the scenes. They're the heroes of our shows. They get no credit, they don't get any public. They don't really get anything out there, and Eric's a big part of that. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about how he's the greatest morning line maker of all time.
I said it on Twitter, but I'll say it with you, too. David Aragona, when he came out with the Travers morning line, people were making stupid comments, and they couldn't have been more wrong. A difficult, confusing field, and he couldn't have had a better line.
Yep, I agree. Listen, David will be the first to say he's blown some lines up here. Guess what? Eric blew some lines up here, too. It's tough, but David does a terrific job, and day in and day out, both with his lines and his handicapping, and people that beat up on him are just idiots. Sorry. It's just ridiculous, and if it wasn't for Twitter and just the general jealousy and nastiness from people on Twitter, it's funny. I don't get that. I don't get nastiness very often in real life because I'm such a brutish, imposing figure. But boy, do people say stupid stuff on the internet. It's pathetic, and David does a great job. He's incredibly, and even when he's wrong, he has good reasons or interesting reasons which might help you somewhere down the road somewhere else.
There you go. Well, good point.
Abusing him is just absurd. I mean, the game is so much better off for having people like him in it.
And you,
Steve. All right, I'm going to go.
Andy Serling, everybody, and your last six cards of Saratoga 2019. It's been a great summer, and it's going to finish with a flourish. I want to thank Andy for this has been the first summer in my memory when I've been able to talk to Andy. I mean, given that we missed 2 weeks, that might have helped. But you know, for so long when we were 6 days a week, we couldn't get Dandy. We would talk once before the meet, maybe once during the meet. But we've, as long as I've been okay, he's been available and has made understanding what's going on out there that much easier. Let's take a last quick break, and we'll come right back. And I never expected that I would only have a short segment for John White, who I think is still up on the Oregon border. I saw that they had the steak, right, at the Humboldt, at the Humboldt County Fair. They had their big $75,000 feature. We'll get John in for a couple of thoughts, as well as a couple of notes about Del Mar and that terrific, as good as a late was with Midnight Bisou, the Catalina Cruiser Great Expectations matchup was unbelievable in the Pat O'Brien. John White to close us out on a what turned into a very fast-moving Tuesday. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania Breds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
To At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Yeah. are the Fat Whites. We love the whitest boy on the beach. John White joins us. Good morning. Where's John? Did John? John wasn't offended, was he? John, I hear background audio. Where's our man? No? Lost him? We lost him. All right. They'll get him back. If you're not familiar, we haven't played that in a while, and they are known as the Fat Whites, Fat White Family, Whitest Boy on the Beach, who's very cool. And I want to thank, who was it that just provided? Eric on Twitter. Forewarned is Uriah St. Louis. There's John White. I hear him now. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. I don't know if I'm going to have enough stuff to fill up this big amount of time we're going to have.
Oh, easy, easy. You know what? I never expected. It's so funny the way today went, because at first I thought I'd have you at 10 o'clock Eastern, and you know, we ended up with an involved conversation with Dick, and then here came Jeff Bloom, and I was late getting to him, and we ended up, I went twice as long with Jeff as expected, and Andy usually, the alarm goes off, the egg timer goes off, and he's usually out of here at 11:30, and he kept talking. He ran through the wire and galloped out.
Was really good stuff with Bloom, especially, I thought. And listen, you asked Andy for a horse for Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. I'll give you one for Saratoga. She's not going to be a big price, but I've been waiting for over a year for this filly to run. I heard about her through the grapevine over a year ago. Fourth race at Saratoga, Indian Pride. Chad Brown was sky high on this filly last year, and it's taken her all this time to finally get into a race. She is 2-1. And by the way, you were talking about morning lines. My congratulations as well to my colleague, David Aragona. That was a sensational Travers morning line that he put out.
Yeah, and, having to figure out how much money the Chad Brown horses were going to take is what was challenging. And you know, that's where the insistence had come from. They won't be 10-1. They were both well over 10-1. And there had to be, you know, the elasticity of a 12-horse field where Tacitus was going to be a clear favorite, where you knew Baffert would take money, and it was impossible that Code of Honor didn't get respectable attention. So I don't know. You would think that people would respect the person that, you know, is doing that kind of a job day to day. So, and you understand the, you know, that issue. You're talking about Indian Pride tomorrow in that fourth race, and that's the Brary Jones homebred out of Mrs. Cornstalk. So this is an interesting player, a proud citizen. So now already a 3-year-old.
Yeah, she was, like I say, heard through the grapevine. I mean, they thought this could be just a really special filly. Obviously, something went awry, but she's, you know, one thing that's great about stable mail, you know, she popped up on my stable mail
coming
here a few weeks, and she's been, working very well all along, and here she pops up tomorrow. So you never know how these hype horses are going to do, but this one's had a lot. Let's put it this way. She's had a lot of hype going back over a year, so this could be a really nice filly.
She's the, for those of you that remember the, the siblings from, going back a few years, there was Biofuel. If you go back, I mean, at this point, it's a while. And remember that 2NDWee, that the Johar, the Ontario bred, was a sibling as well of this one. So Indian Pride.
I wasn't planning to be on with you this today anyway. As I mentioned last week, my plan had been to be on the road today, That's a 12-hour drive back to Los Angeles from Northern California near the Oregon border, and I was going to break it up into 2 days, but I was too homesick, so I bit the bullet and drove the whole 12 hours yesterday, which I was exhausted when I got home. But you mentioned the big race of the Humboldt County Fair Meet, the final race and the biggest race of the meet, which is the mile and 5/8 Humboldt County Marathon. That's a race that people really covet in that part of the country. They claim horses trying to win it and so forth. And it's a tricky race because a mile and 5/8 on a half-mile oval, I was concerned, you know, it's so easy for a jockey to misjudge it because they've got to go past the finish line four times. The fourth time is the finish of the race. But so, I mean, starting the morning before, I was consulting with the clerk of scales saying how many of these riders have not ridden in this race before, and three of them hadn't. So that was a concern to me. And so I was reminding the clerk of scales that morning, also Sunday morning, the morning of the race, and then called them in the jockey's room before the race to be sure to keep reminding these guys that they got to go past the finish line four times. And so now they're standing in the gate. And you've got Sayow, who's the half-brother to Kentucky Derby winner, Super Saver, who's not the best of gate horses, and I've got my binoculars on him, and he's going to be the last horse into the gate, but unfortunately he never made it into the gate as the starter dispatched the field before Sayow went into his post position. And so I had said right away, the six is behind the gate. And I said, can we get the inquiry up? And I looked up, and my colleague, Will Myers, who's worked 34 Ferndale meets, that's how much experience he has there. He already had the inquiry on the board. And then Will said, well, there's only four horses running. And I'm looking and looking and looking. And so then I was trying to figure out who was actually running in the race. And by a process of elimination, I realized that it was number two, Dizzy Dancer, who also was not participating in the race. And we looked back at the replay immediately afterwards and realized that the assistant starter had a hold of him, so he was deprived of a fair start. So what was supposed to be a six-horse field for the biggest race of the meet had only four official starters. That canceled show wagering on the race and also canceled the super high five, which means carryover, because that carryover continues on the fair circuit. It'll go on to the big Fresno fair when they kick off their meet coming up later. So that was certainly quite a bizarre way to wrap up that Ferndale meet, to say the least. That's a race I will not forget for a long, long time, if ever.
Well, and ultimately, 4-5 favorite Engram ends up winning, and that for Quentin Miller.
He had won it the year before and had lost 12 in a row, so this is a race. You know, you talk about horses for courses. He certainly likes that track, and he likes that distance, and He'd won it the year before, so now he's a two-time winner of the race.
I love it, and let me see. I had the page up a minute ago, and I had put it on. I hadn't put it on my my list of buyers, but what did he get? He got a 73 buyer,
which isn't too bad for there.
No,
actually,
it's not. It really isn't. John, we only got a couple of minutes. Your quick Travers thought and anything else. You got about 2.5 minutes.
Well, I thought, of course, that Code of Honor was just so impressive in that race. And you had talked about it quite a bit, how confident Mr. McGahey was coming into it. And he said it to yourself yesterday. He made no bones. He was confident in the way the horse had trained. And he, you know, when you get a trainer like that, I mean, you use the term trash talking, and for sure that was trash talking. I mean, and it lived up to the trash talk. And you know, you talk about buyers though, how about Improbable? That he looked pretty good in his comeback. You know, here's the horse who was the favorite in the Kentucky Derby and Preakness, and he wins the Shared Belief, and he got a 104 buyer in that race, which was only one under Code of Honors in the Travers. So that was a very nice comeback race for Improbable and Bob Baffert in that Shared Belief. Omaha Beach had been targeting that and had the virus set back, and now they're looking at the ACAC at Churchill for his comeback race.
They all ideally will come together for Breeders' Cup, although you certainly got the indication from Mr. Farish and from Shug that Code of Honor's no certainty, even if he were to win the the Jockey Club, they were exceedingly ambivalent, it seemed, about Breeders' Cup. Non-committal, the best way to put it. And then, of course, John...
But the good news is the fact that they're talking about running him next year, maybe even the year after that. These days in racing, that's fantastic to keep these horses going.
Well, and, you know, a big part of that, of course, is, you know, Noble Mission, a bit of a, you know, a bit in the development stage. I'll discuss that tomorrow with Sid Fernando. But, you know, kind of, you know, needs some augmenting. I mean, there's no reason to rush a coat of honor off to the shed. And John, of course, the other story, West Coast, that will next week we could save it for. John Sadler has more or less, he and Mark Cassie this summer have forced themselves into the picture with, you know, Chad Brown obviously is the leader toward an Eclipse Award training season. But John Sadler, another two big wins in the stakes action at Del Mar over the weekend.
And John Sadler moving past Charlie Whittingham, the great Charlie Whittingham, on the list, all-time list for stakes wins at Del Mar. So anytime you pass Charlie Whittingham on a list, that's a fantastic accomplishment.
John White, everybody, back home after a trip up to Ferndale, to Humboldt County in the fair. We're going to send you out into the Tuesday action. You got a lot of options. A nice Tuesday. The weather's gorgeous here, so I'm sure in Erie later and Finger Lakes this afternoon and Indiana and others. Back with you tomorrow, 9 o'clock. If you missed anything, replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM. And Case and Deja will have the archive and podcast up in a little bit. I want to thank John and Andy, Jeff Bloom for the really enlightening visit, and earlier Dick Powell. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Paul Matisse with a analysis of the big weekend, and Sid Fernando as well. Stay with us. Talk to you tomorrow.